It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow. Wherever you are, tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
Hi everyone, it's Chris here from the Naked Gaming podcast team. Welcome to the second episode of Monkey Island Discs. This month we're hearing from the host of BBC Radio 3's Sound of Gaming, that's Louise Blaine. She's a huge fan of Assassin's Creed, all things gaming of course, and horror. In fact, she hosts a true crime podcast all about true crime podcasts, and it's called Kilt. That's K-I-L-L-T, so check it out. This was a fun chat. We started at the beginning, of course, with early gaming memories.
My brother and I, we didn't have a console for a long time, actually. I played Mario at other people's houses. I played Sonic at people's houses. And I ended up, at one point, I think I borrowed a Game Gear from someone. And I think my parents thought that I would hate it. And that was why they'd sort of let me borrow it, that I would really not like it. And of course, I loved it. And so did my brother. And then we actually... Our first console was a PlayStation 1, so the little grey box.
Oh.
But we actually, it was really cool. Do you remember when this happened? You would rent a video game console. Do you remember
yes,
that?
Yes, unbelievable. I know, for the weekend or whatever.
So we rented a PlayStation before we got it. And I remember we got Crash Bandicoot, which became just one of my absolute iconic games. And we rented Twisted Metal, and that was back when you could do like that split screen, and I think Tomb Raider 2 as well. So we rented all of those, loved them, and then that Christmas we got one, and there was that grey, there was the one wrapped box between where both our Christmas presents were, and that was our shared PlayStation. And from
and
there,
you probably just knew what it was.
Absolutely. And from there it just took off, really. It was just, I think my brother and I, we really bonded over gaming. It was such a lovely thing. Like, my dad would come home every month with official PlayStation magazine, which I then eventually, God, 20 years later, got to write for. And it was just, he would bring that in, and my brother would get to play the demo disc first, and then I would read the magazine, and then we'd take turns. And I've just got such brilliant memories of growing up with that console, which I think has really come into the future with me. And working for official PlayStation magazine was like the dream. I mean, I got to write the demo disc page, which for me was just...
That's amazing.
It was unbelievable. It was just the best thing to do. So I have a real affinity with PlayStation. I love my Xbox as well, but I have this connection with that brand because it's just so associated with all of those gaming joyful moments for me.
You've mentioned two things that I completely identify and had exactly the same experience of you as. One was going around to a friend's house, not having a console to start with, and playing Final Fantasy VII, and just thinking, I didn't really talk to this friend of mine. I just used to want to go to his house just to play Final Fantasy VII. Yeah. And I didn't know what the game was called. And it only was years later where someone said, oh, they're re-releasing, you know, this on the PlayStation 4 now. They're remaking the old game. And I thought, it's the same one.
It's the one.
So that happened to me. And secondly, with the demo discs.
Yeah.
Demo discs were such a huge feature, weren't they? Like nowadays, you can download a demo for almost any game, through the internet. It's not as special as putting in the demo disc and seeing which of the 5, 6, 7 games on there you actually like to play. It's an amazing thing.
Totally. The demo disc was just, I mean, I think a lot of people have really good memories of the demo disc because there were sometimes, I mean, games were, as they are now, expensive. They're really expensive. I mean, actually, sneakily, we had a chipped PlayStation back in the day. It meant that we could play things like all the new games because it was really expensive and we really couldn't afford to buy all the new games. So a demo disc at that point was just this portal of all these little games that maybe you'd never play the full game of. I mean, I probably have memories of some games purely from the demo, just from that one looping bit, which we did over and over and over again.
It's such a nice early memory, and it sounds like you got on well with your brother then, so there wasn't too much fighting over who got to play?
No, we bonded, really. I think we knew that if we fought, then we wouldn't get to play. So we were actually, it was kind of the dream. I think we'd probably play, and that would probably be the time where we'd get along the best. And I mean, I remember we were playing Tomb Raider 2, which was such a hard game. And we also had that, we had the strategy guide. And I seem to remember that that strategy guide, by the end of its life, was just pages everywhere.
Tattered.
Totally. The fact that we desperately tried to do one boulder trap after the next. But I think, yeah, really positive bonding. And I think my brother and I, now that I work in games, and we still talk about games. I mean, we don't live in the same city. I haven't seen him for over a year because of COVID, but we've talked a lot about Assassin's Creed. We've talked a lot about what he's doing in Demon's Souls. So actually, it kind of brings us together still.
Well, let's talk about Assassin's Creed, because I'm going to ask you about your favourite game of all time, but I already know you're going to say Assassin's Creed.
Yes.
So Assassin's Creed, for those who haven't played, you must play it firstly, because it's amazing.
Yes.
And secondly, you are an assassin, obviously, as the name would suggest. You're sneaking around. You can assassinate kind of big bosses, but you don't just run in and charge in with a big sword, although you can nowadays. In the latest games, you try and sneak around the rooftops, drop in just behind them, pull off the perfect move, and then you're on your way, kind of thing, trying to escape. So of that huge series, which is now, I think there's about 10 games at the very least, and mobile games as well, is it the very first one that's your favourite?
No. So my experiences with Assassin's Creed were, again, from my brother, who, when I bought a PS3, I'd had a PS2 when I was at uni. I think I'd spent some student loan money on it. And I played all the iToy stuff. And I remember playing Samba de Amigo and getting my arms absolutely exhausted. But after a while, I didn't have a console for a bit. And then I bought a PS3. And I bought a PS3 because it was also a really good cheap way to get a Blu-ray player, back when you actually wanted a Blu-ray player.
Yeah.
And so I had this new PS3, I had a new TV, and I thought, right, I need to catch up. I've missed a few years. And my brother gave me Assassin's Creed 2 to play. And this was at the same time he was playing Brotherhood. So it was only a year old at that point. And I had to then teach myself twin stick controls, because in the time between my PS2 and PS3 games, suddenly, if you know, you control your character with the left stick and you control your camera with the right. And that had not been put into my head yet. I hadn't learned that. So I actually used Assassin's Creed 2 as my learning for how to do that.
What a way to start off.
I know, because that game is notorious. I mean, you have to develop what they call the Assassin's Creed claw.
Yes,
which
the claw
back
on
in
the
day,
right hand, yeah.
You had to hold R2 to free run and to climb. Yeah. So I had to teach myself that too. But what it did was, Assassin's Creed 2 is Ezio Auditore da Firenze, who is an assassin in Renaissance Italy in the 15th century. And it's just the most beautiful game, because you explore Tuscany and you explore Venice, and you have this wonderful little city of your own called Monteriggioni, and it just keeps getting bigger. And the music from Jesper Kidd, it's just, I think that's one of my favourite soundtracks of all time, because it's associated with what games could be and what games could become. Suddenly I was in this beautiful, and you know, PS3 graphics, they're not obviously up to scratch now, but it was still beautiful, and it looked, the lighting in those games and the sense of adventure as you rode between them, and you were going on a gondola in Venice, and you could literally do that, and all of that was suddenly, like, it was like waking up. It was like suddenly, like, this is games and this is amazing. And actually, it's not games, it's just how Assassin's Creed 2 will make you feel, but it's the potential. So I have so much wrapped into that wonderful story, the future and the past stuff, that I can't disassociate the Assassin's Creed franchise for what it gave me in terms of how I felt about games. So while other Assassin's Creeds are brilliant, and I absolutely adore Valhalla, and especially Syndicate, which is the Victorian London version, and Black Flag, which is the pirate simulator.
I like the Black Flag a lot.
So good.
Yeah.
I can't ever say that my favourite game isn't Assassin's Creed 2, because it just meant a lot.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
That was a long way of saying, yes, Assassin's Creed 2. Sorry.
Is there one game in the history of your playing of games that you really hate? Is there one that you would very happily bin and never play again?
So I think when you review games for a long time, and especially when you're just starting in games journalism and editors give you terrible games to review that have 100-word reviews, over the time, there is one game that I absolutely despise that I think is really, really hateful and disgusting. And it's a game called Agony, Have you heard of agony?
Agony? I haven't heard of agony, no. Tell me about agony.
Agony is literally agony. So agony is a survival horror type experience where you go to hell and you experience lots of hellish things and you're going deeper and deeper into hell, and it's full of really, really disturbing imagery. And it's full of disturbing imagery in the way that the devs... Because the thing is, I love horror films. I'm a big, big fan of horror films, and I love horror, and I think it's really interesting psychologically what horror of all kinds can do.
Yeah.
But what these developers did was they went, oh, this will really disturb people, this will really scare people. So they put in really disgusting imagery of children dying, and just all kinds of really hateful stuff, Chris, really, really hateful stuff. And then they made a big deal out of the... They said, oh, we're going to be censored because we're so cool and edgy. And then the thing was, the game in the middle of it was just dire. It was just walking around in this red world that was hideous. The checkpoints were terrible. The saves were terrible. There was no... The puzzles were useless. There was no... I mean, the things that make a game... Nobody really thinks about, because if they work properly, you don't notice them. But the minute they don't work properly, the minute the signposting is terrible, where you're actually going, hey, where do I go now? What happens here? So I hated it for it was hateful, it was disgusting, it was completely puerile, and it also didn't function as a game. And that to me is awful. It ticks or crosses all of the boxes. So that's my worst possible game. But I mean, thankfully, there's not actually that many agonies in the world. So you can tend to always find something somewhere. But I think I have pet hates in games.
Because I don't like it when the signposting is too obvious, you know, like this is a dead end. You start to lose your suspended disbelief. You know, you start to realise that you're playing a game. But what are the things that do it for you?
So I know that a lot of people absolutely love this, and I understand that it makes them feel like they're living something real. But the reason that I play games is for escapism. So I hate over encumbrance in games. I hate it.
What, when your character's too heavy to move or something?
Yes. Yeah, when you pick up too much stuff.
Oh, that you're totally right.
So I hate picking up too much stuff. And the problem is I understand that Skyrim is a beautiful, wonderful fantasy experience that people have played about 8 or 9 times. The problem I have is that in Skyrim, I pick up all the forks because they're all there.
You're like me in Fallout. There's a mug. I want it. There's an ashtray. I'm having that as well.
Yes, because I'm always so afraid that I'll get to a room and a character says, but Louise, where are all the forks? And I'll say, I passed them all by because someone told me that I didn't have to pick them up. So both in Skyrim and Fallout, I end up completely over encumbered. But I really enjoyed Fallout 4
and
the fact that all of that junk was useful because you could craft with it.
I know, finally.
Yeah, so that made it even worse almost, because all I really did in that game was go get stuff, take it back, make more stuff.
Hoover everything up.
So that's my...
But you're totally right though, because there'll be a mission I think it's in Fallout 4, you know, you'll turn up somewhere and they'll go, oh, by the way, have you got 50, you know, claws of a something? And then you think, well, no, because I'm used to not picking this stuff up. So, like you say, you worry that you're going to get to that point, and then you're going to have to go searching around for stupid claws for 5 hours.
Totally, when you'd already been them because you thought you didn't need them. Because people have been telling you to let go of things. I can't let go. We can't frozen in these situations. I can't do it. So I play games like Assassin's Creed, where I fill my pockets with concrete and nobody says anything.
Hundreds of tons of concrete, and that is fine. You probably like Minecraft's probably right up your street, because you can carry thousands of bits of wood.
Infinite.
Stop kidding around, Snake.
And tell us about game character-wise. Is there one character that you would like to be? I know a lot of people do things like cosplaying and they go to conventions and they dress up as characters. In our first episode, OJ Borge said that he wanted to be someone from Far Cry, the one with the island.
Yeah, he said he wanted to be Jason.
Yeah, which is quite an interesting choice, I thought, because you wouldn't immediately think that. But I suppose that game had a huge resonance with him.
Yeah.
So with you, is there a particular character that you maybe identify with or that you just like to be?
You know, when I think about who I'd like to cosplay as, when it comes to cosplay, I would love to cosplay as my Destiny Hunter, because she's so cool. She has the coolest clothes. She has an amazing cape. I always love changing her cape out. I love her. And it's weird, because it's strange, isn't it, when you identify with someone that doesn't actually say anything. And she doesn't say anything. It's just me and the ghost. But I kind of love the idea of all these powers. And I think it comes down to sort of representation in games, doesn't it? Where you put yourself in your characters. And when someone is a blank slate, you can put anyone into that and you have a very good idea of who they are, regardless of them not saying very much. But I think in terms of other characters that I love, I think we did a special Powers episode of Sound of Gaming on Radio 3. And what I loved about going through all of those special powers is the fact that there's always ones you want. So I want Jesse Faden's amazing telekinesis from Control, and I want her leather jacket because it's incredible.
That's an amazing game, Control.
Oh, yeah. It's
what a game.
I didn't like it initially.
Oh, really?
And then I got into it. Yeah, I didn't, the writing didn't sit with me initially, and then I got much more into it, and I really, really enjoyed it.
It's quite disjointed, isn't it, when you start off? It's sort of, they don't really explain, you know, is it the director or there's some main character, the
yes,
chairman or something?
The
they don't really fully tell you what's going on in that game, and then it's sort of, but then the disjointedness kind of becomes part of it as you go, and it's sort of, it works. But yeah, I see what you mean.
Yeah. It's, I think once you get it, I mean, the gun's great, all the weapon stuff's great. So I really like Jessie. And I also, I mean, I love Eivor from Valhalla because she's quite different. She's quite a different type of character. And I, of last year, despite the fact that in The Last of Us Part 2, I really don't like Ellie for many, many reasons. And I think everybody, no spoilers, doesn't like Ellie. But I feel for Ellie, and I love Abby as well as characters. They're both incredible, breathing human characters with very, very big flaws.
Yeah, but also thank goodness for, you know, actual female characters in video games that are interesting and more than one, and it just thank goodness, because it's so boring playing the same kind of game over and over again, I found anyway.
And wonderful, because, you know, Ellie and you know, her relationship with Dina, I love that so much, and I think that's so important for us to see people like us, you know, and seeing Ellie and Dina's relationship is a wonderful thing. And there was a couple of early scenes in that I just adored, that I suddenly felt, oh, I feel really seen, and that's really nice. So yeah, those are great characters.
I'm going to let you combine here. It's a first on Monkey Island Disc. Who's your other part that you would have then, if you're going to kind of choose those characters?
Evie Fry from Assassin's Creed Syndicate with Jesse's leather jacket. Because she's amazing. Because I actually had this really lovely moment when I was playing Assassin's Creed Syndicate for the first time. I was running along a street in Victorian London, and I was running down the middle of the street, because of course I was running down the middle of the street. I was probably chasing someone. And there were women walking by in traditional Victorian garb.
Yeah.
And I had this moment of, I always want to be like this, and I don't want to be like them. And it was a real transferable moment of, I never want to be seen as just that. As just expected to look pretty and nothing else. I'm always going to be the assassin running down the middle of the street. And if I'm allowed Jesse's powers, I'll be the telekinetic assassin running down the middle of the street in a great leather jacket. And that is my perfect character.
The knives are just flying, assassinating people as you go.
For days. Just knives for days.
Do you have a favourite console that you're playing nowadays? And if so, what kind of games are you going for?
So I've actually been jumping around a lot recently. I'm quite fortunate in the fact that I have a PlayStation 5 and an Xbox Series X, and I've really been enjoying Xbox's Game Pass options. So last night I was playing Sea of Thieves with a couple of friends, which I found really, really nice. But I've also been playing, again, on Xbox Outriders, which is also weirdly compelling for just another game where you shoot things for loot. It's got those little dopamine hits that are just enough. So it's like, oh, this is bigger, this is more powerful, I'm going to shoot more people. Which doesn't make me in a good light. I do like doing other things other than murdering people, which, funnily enough, I've been playing... I love the Frontiers Planet Zoo and Planet Coaster games.
Oh, yeah.
I love those games. So it was actually really nice. Over Easter weekend, I sat down with my laptop and I played hours of Planet Coaster. And I think I spent about 3 hours just organising a plaza and designing it. And that was just lovely peace. And it was just super chill. So I think it's nice to be able to balance your shooting everything and assassinating everything with nice games like Stardew or Animal Crossing or Planet Coaster or Sims. So I quite like to balance it out and try everything else. But this year, I'm really hoping the new Horizon Zero Dawn comes for PlayStation. That'll be big. And also Far Cry 6, that's coming at some point. But I'm kind of intrigued as to what games will actually come out, obviously, because of all the delays from working from home and things. But it means we might get a chance to actually play our backlog, Chris. What's on your backlog?
Right, do you want to... Actually, I've got two full lists of backlog games. Everyone's got games that they wish that they'd had time to play, right? And I have two lists. It's called my gaming backlog list, and there's about 50 on there. Mm-hmm. Kingdom Hearts, the latest Kingdom Hearts game. I never played that.
Okay.
Because I went back and started with 1, 2, then I did all the downloadable content, watched this four-hour opera film, but I never played the latest release, so... I need to do that. God of War to do properly, the PlayStation God of War, because I've played a bit, but, you know, a lot of these games I've played like half an hour to an hour of, like Final Fantasy VII Remake, but I haven't actually done the 40-hour, 60-hour in-depth play that I really, truly want to do.
We just run out of time, don't we? That's the problem. It's like, what happens when I spend 180 hours playing Valhalla is I miss 180 hours of other games. Do I regret it? No.
Exactly.
I don't regret it, but I just want more time.
Have you played Ghost of Tsushima? That's what I wanted to ask you.
So I started Ghost of Tsushima. And again, that's one of those ones like that that I played a couple of hours of. So I actually, I think there was a PlayStation 5 free upgrade.
A multiplayer update as well, yeah.
Yeah, oh, interesting. So I definitely, that needs to be at the top, actually, because that's a beautiful game. And I love those, I mean, it's kind of Assassin's-y, isn't it? A big open world of places to go and so, and with a sword. So it should be right up my street. So I should go back. And it has the most incredible soundtrack from Ilan Ishkeri. It's amazing, yeah.
I'm sure you featured that before on Sound of Gaming, haven't you? I'm sure.
Yes, we did.
Tell us a little bit about Sound of Gaming as well, because it's such a great series and it's something that I've had the great joy to introduce once or twice on the radio myself, and it's right up my street. It's my kind of program. If you're a gamer and you love music, you can catch up with the latest releases on a monthly basis now as well.
Yeah, and we were quite irregular last year, but now since our April episode, the first Saturday of every month at 3 o'clock on Radio 3 is a Sound of Gaming Day. And basically every month we go through a different sort of theme of types of games, and we have done sort of things like first person shooters, but we also kind of go into slightly sort of more in-depth things. Like at the moment we've done special powers, we've got some really interesting stuff coming up, talk about the best scores from those things. We've also got our what we call our cutscene, which when we speak to a composer about what they're working on and they break down some of their best scores, which is really exciting just to hear the background of things, because hearing, you know, Enon Zur, who was the Fallout 4 composer, talking about how he took his pieces to Todd Howard and had the responses of Todd. So it's kind of like a composer's commentary on the soundtrack that you hear. So it's always really interesting to do that. And we also have what we call our concert hall moment, which is when we take a track that has been performed by a live orchestra and sort of talk about the ways that that's changed things. So we get to talk about different themes, different games, and also sort of deep dive with composers, which is so exciting.
Yeah, and I urge people to listen to it, because it's, even if you just love gaming and you don't know that much about music, you certainly will by the end of the programme, and it gives you such an insight that when you are playing Fallout 4, for example, or games with like generative music where the music changes based on what you're doing, it gives you such a huge insight into how it actually works. So please, everybody, give it a listen. And Louise, thank you so much for talking to us. We really appreciate your time.
Thank you for having me.
Long may you continue to have your show.
I hope so. Fingers crossed. Thanks for having me.
And that's it from us in this episode. If you're enjoying Monkey Island Discs, do give us a review on iTunes or follow us on Spotify or wherever you listen. We'll be back with our news update episode very soon, and if you subscribe, you'll get it ASAP. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.